We're going to go ahead and call the special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Mr. Gould, will you please call the roll?
Regent Carter.
Here.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo. Vice Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Chair Geddes.
Here.
Regent Hayes.
Here.
Regent Lieberman.
Here.
Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Page.
Here.
Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Trachuk.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Oh, I'm on.
Oh, Regent Del Carlo, thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll have Regent Carter lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll now move to item number one, public comment. Dean Gould.
Thank you. Public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their name. The board chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being considered. In accordance with Attorney General Opinion Number 00-047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the Board Chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Do we have any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Do we have any public comment in Las Vegas? Please approach, state your name, and proceed, sir.
Hello, my name is Robert Manis, M-A-N-I-S, and I am the past president of Nevada Faculty Alliance and faculty at CSN. A year ago, I was here, this very place, stating that the bargaining at CSN was ready to be completed, and we had reached a compromise. But what happened was the school council interfered and went backwards in bargaining on the topic of market hires. I was hopeful at the time that Joe Reynolds would step forward and try to resolve this, but instead of doing that, System Council also went and revoked a nearly settled item on arbitration. I sent you an email this last week stating how this was an illegal act that was contrary to the Labor Relations Act of the United States. As far as arbitration is concerned, I know the Chancellor has said that he is not supportive of it. He's told us he's not opposed. There may be some gray area in between. But the point is that he doesn't have the ability to let his personal opinion to do this because the bargaining has proceeded to a certain point. And just like if MGM was sold to another company, they would not be able to start from scratch on the bargaining and forego everything that has been accomplished. It is against the law. It's a bad faith bargaining to take something off the table, as I mentioned to you guys. We hope you don't have to go to district court. We have gone to fact finding on salary. We'll be getting that recommendation in about 3 or 4 weeks. But we would just urge the regents to follow the law in this particular case and to allow the bargaining on those issues to resume where they left off. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. Next.
Hello, my name is Stacey Walters. I'm a tenured professor in the Department of Fine Arts at CSN. I'm here to talk about wages and low morale within the faculty at CSN. The faculty union has been engaged in collective bargaining with CSN's administration and representatives of ENSHE for over 2 years, going on three. While many proposals have been agreed upon, a few remain unsettled, including negotiating on base salaries for faculty and arbitration. Meanwhile, CSN faculty have been stripped of base wage increases. All of other portions of our pay are and retirement are calculated as a percentage of base salaries. Everything from overload pay, summer pay, and tenure raises. From my perspective, there is no means of receiving a salary increase if I stay at CSN. Performance pay has been offered only once in the past 12 years, and the STEP system used to increase wages regularly to retain faculty was removed. New faculty are fleeing for better paying jobs. In bargaining, faculty are told by the CSN administration and ENSHE that the chancellor will not allow base salary increases. The chancellor states that regents are against salary increases and arbitration for settling grievance disputes. We're asking you, the regents, to support your faculty. Nevada needs to retain faculty. The high turnover of faculty is a serious issue for addressing the students' first agenda. With the inconsistency in salary increases and the deterioration of the STEP system, faculty lose hope. They overload their schedules and are increasingly stretched too thin. Grievance arbitration is needed to signal to faculty that the CSN administration, ENSHE, and the regents are serious about faculty issues. By definition, it is a method of dispute resolution used to, as an alternative to litigation, which is costly, and this and arbitration, grievance arbitration offers a binding decisions on the issues presented. We need assurances from our regents. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. Hello, my name is Dr. Jennifer Nelson, and I am a member of the English department at CSN. I also serve on the academic faculty's contract negotiations team. I'm speaking today to clarify that contract grievance arbitration is a mandatory subject of bargaining per ENSHE code. For a time at CSN, collaborating with our administrative counterparts, we negotiated rules and procedures for arbitrating contract grievances, disputes between employer and employee over how a duly ratified contract should be interpreted and enforced. Apparently, given the many months spent researching and debating together to craft this contract provision, both parties then believed that CSN would benefit from academic faculty and college administrators working together with a guarantee that when all other grievance procedures might fail, binding arbitration would settle our contract enforcement disputes. But then, under the influence of ENSHE system officials, the admins' team attitudes changed. They took arbitration off the table and made us believe they risked their jobs if they pursued this issue any further. Certainly, we don't want anyone to lose a job over this, but we do want binding accountability to the contract that we will eventually complete and ratify. ENSHE code holds voluntary measures of mediation and fact-finding in high esteem. But if voluntary measures could produce real accountability, ENSHE code wouldn't need Chapter 6 for discipline and termination, would it? Binding contract grievance arbitration protects everyone from bad actors in a fair, prompt, and cost-effective manner. Regents, only you can tell CSN administrators it's safe for them to finalize with us a contract provision that protects our contract with binding arbitration. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next.
Hi, my name is Amin Kam. I'm a mathematics professor at CSN. I just ran from Science Tech Expo. We're doing amazing work. One of the things, I hope you understand that. Big reason we're here is because we don't have good pay. We haven't had actual raise, and COLA is not a raise. It's just to keep up with the inflation. So if you have an institution where it's anybody could go to a strip and get a job at a valley, makes more money, what will happen? You're gonna lose quality in teachers. I hope you understand that. And since we have been started bargaining, one of the big reasons they're telling, one of the big problems they said is they cannot bargain about salaries and base raise. It's you guys have the power to do that. So We want to tell you that please send somebody from your board to negotiate us, say these are the things that we could work with, what are the things we can do. That's what we are here for. Now, if you elevate us from this pay raise, and I'm not even talking about a health benefit, which is really bad because we're stuck with PEB, what's happening is it's preventing some of us doing all this volunteer work we do at the Science Tech Expo or all those type of things. We would love to do these things more, but we're preventing from doing that. We're stuck with working summertime. We should not be working summertime just to make sure that we're fine for the rest of the year. We need that academic freedom to find out what's going on with other things. One of the things is Chancellor Riley did a good thing getting rid of this remedial math courses. And now what we're working on is how do we solve this problem? And when we need to think about it, come together to solve a problem, we're stuck in teaching summer classes. So when do we get our break? I hope you understand that and direct this board, direct someone to send us so we can negotiate properly and openly. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Hello, my name is Ted Shodock. I am a librarian faculty at CSN, and I'm also representing some of my other librarian faculty, fellow librarians who are not here today. I am here to talk about low morale among faculty, which according to the pay survey is low and trending lower. We believe that a fair and enforceable contract, one in which when there are disputes about the meaning of the contract, a neutral third party makes the final decision, will improve morale. It will address a feeling of powerlessness, a feeling of not being listened to, that unfortunately has become pervasive among among CSN faculty. A contract with binding grievance arbitration would demonstrate that the Board of Regents is committed to improving faculty well-being, which in turn will improve the overall climate for students, faculty, and staff at CSN. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
So today I want to talk to you more. My name is Luis Ortega. Today I want to talk to you more about my experience in collective bargaining and why postponing and not completing this contract is against the Student First Initiative of the College of Southern Nevada. We have been negotiating this contract for almost 3 years. We have done so much progress, but we have some sticking points that we still need to agree on. And that is the case of arbitration, grievance, and regressive bargaining on the administration side. On those sticking points, the administration is always saying, we cannot make decisions on those points. They always said, it's the chancellor, it's the Board of Regents. That's the reason why we're here, to gain your support. I had to cancel one of my appointments last week to meet with the collective bargaining team, and I work at the Henderson campus, and on my way back to the Henderson campus, I was reflecting and saying, why am I doing all of this driving when we could be finalizing our contract? I should be helping our students. That's my main responsibility. But no, I'm driving 20 miles to meet with the team and then be prepared to come and speak to you. I'm asking you for your help to finalize this contract. We need your help. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Next.
Hi, my name is Emily King. I'm a faculty librarian at the College of Southern Nevada, and I'm a little nervous. I usually talk to computers, not to people. So I'm here because of my experience on the collective bargaining team. We've been involved in this for over 3 years, and it's a lot of work. It's taking away from what we could be doing for students, and what we want is all this work to be worth it. We want a fair, enforceable contract at the end of this process. And I ask you to urge our administrators, give them permission to finalize this contract. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. Chairman Geddes, Regents, Chancellor Riley. Hello, my name is Adrian Havis, and I'm a member of the English department at CSN. I also teach journalism. I'm also president of NFA, but I'm speaking today not on behalf of the state board, but rather with and for my brothers and sisters of CSN. I'm speaking today because of our experience with the issues of stagnant pay, as well as overlong contract negotiations, which are now extending into the fourth year. At CSN, we simply want a fair and enforceable contract, and such a contract should not grant our employer, be it CSN, president, or the NSHE chancellor, final authority to determine what contract language says and how it can be implemented and interpreted. The binding contract grievance arbitration that we seek is not the way that CSN, NFA's NSHE opponents have painted it. Instead, it will cover contract violations and grievances and not salary negotiations. And binding grievance arbitration, I'd like to remind assembled regents here today in this room and elsewhere in the state, is currently included in nearly every faculty union contract across the nation, and particularly in settings where employees work under no-strike provisions. Granting binding arbitration or binding grievance arbitration of contract has been the standard employer's concession for over 70 years. Thank you very much for your consideration today.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Steve Soltz. I'm a tenured faculty at CSN and also a member of the bargaining team. You've heard many of my colleagues talk to you on the talking points that is preventing us from reaching a contract agreement. 4 years ago, the legal majority, the Democratic majority of the faculty at CSN voted to unionize. Why did they do that? Because the state of Nevada and the Board of Regents failed to meet the needs of the faculty. There's three talking points that are, or three areas of contention. If you don't know what they are, you should know by now, or your general counsel, I can assure you, can inform you of why we haven't reached an agreement. My feeling at this point is the Board of Regents is either complacent or neglectful in supporting faculty at CSN. We have increased graduation rates. Our president tells us what a wonderful job we're doing. So you tell me any other employee in the state of Nevada that continues to do a better job year after year for 10 years and doesn't get a raise. In fact, we're making less money based on inflation than we were when I started. That's not right. And here's what I've come to decision. The only thing the Board of Regents understands, you're all politicians. What does that mean? You get elected, except for the chancellor. So you can either work together, as we've asked for your support. You can either work and try to support us, and we can come to an agreement rather quickly, or myself, I'm speaking for myself, and I think I can get fellow faculty. I can assure you I'm going to use all the power I can to influence the 30,000 voting students at CSN to go to the election polls and see if we can get a board that will support the faculty at CSN. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. Jason Elias from the American Association of University Professors. I'm the chief negotiator for NFA, Nevada Faculty Alliance, College of Southern Nevada chapter. I've been before this board before. I'm going to quote your code, Title 4, Chapter 4, Professional Staff Collective Bargaining Regulations, Section 23. It is prohibited for the system or its designated representatives to, and I'm going to skip down to number 5, refuse to bargain collectively in good faith with an employee organization as required by this chapter. The facts are indisputable. We were at the table discussing items. We settled on one item, market hire factors, which basically would allow faculty who are hired off the tenure track to be able to get onto the tenure track, and CSN agreed with us. We also, for a year, did not get a response, or actually we got a no response on grievance arbitration. Again, arbitration of contract, of what we want in a contract, is to the state legislature. And our bill didn't go forward, AB 459, I believe. It didn't go forward. So we don't have that mechanism like other employees in the state. However, we finally got a response from CSN, and we started to bargain over grievance arbitration, which, again, is in 99% of all collective bargaining agreements in the United States, okay, about 100% in Canada and Western Europe and the rest of Europe. Then, for some strange reason, it was taken off the table. That is the definition of bad faith bargaining. There are two mechanisms we can utilize. One is to go to district court, which would cost us and taxpayers a lot of money. The second is for the regents to enforce your own code. We're asking you to enforce your own code and to bargain in good faith with the faculty at College of Southern Nevada. Please agendize this item for your December meeting in closed session, open session. We want to engage. President, and I'll stop right now, I've made an offer to you, Chairman Geddes, to meet with myself and with the Chancellor. I would love to meet with as many of you as possible. We are so close. We want to work with CSN administration. We have been. It's up to you to help make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, we will close public comment and we will go to item number two, the board chair report. I just wanted to inform the board that, as you all are aware, redistricting is coming up in 2021 after the 2020 census. And we have worked to secure Scott Wasserman to advise our legal counsel staff on performing redistricting. Mr. Wasserman performed the redistricting for the Nevada State Legislature in 1991 and in 2001, and did so there were no legal challenges. He joined our board as legal counsel, and in 2011, he performed the redistricting then, and actually ours was the only redistricting plan that went through the legislature and the governor and the board with unanimous votes throughout. The others were challenged in court and settled by the courts. So we thought it would be prudent to secure Mr. Wasserman to assist us. We'll be signing a contract with him, and then he'll be reaching out to the entire board to talk to you about the process, working with Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds, and talking to you about your districts and what the numbers are looking like, and we'll start developing that process. And we'll get an update on the overall process in the near future. So that concludes my report. Any questions? All right, we will go to item number three, consent. Do I have a motion for approval of the consent?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I have a question about item number B.
Okay, we'll pull it.
Okay.
Do I have a motion for approval of 3A?
So moved.
Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent Carter. Any questions on 3A? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. 3B, Regent Perkins.
Okay, on section one, it's the A and B. Can someone explain the difference between A and B? Because it seems like B is just a repeat of A. And is that really, is that what I'm reading, or is there like a difference between the two?
Chief Counsel Reynolds?
Thank you, Chair. I'm rereading that real quick right now. What?
No, do you want me to?
So, present recommendations, where is?
Mr. Chair, if I can help.
No. Regent Hayes, want to take a stab at it?
Well, it looks like A is about the appointment of a search committee. B is about an appointment of an acting or interim chancellor. So very big difference in that one is about appointing a search committee. The other is about appointing a person.
It seems like it's mentioned. That's also mentioned in A, whether they decide to determine a search committee.
B has nothing to do with the search committee. B has to do with the person who had. If Tom walked out of the door today and we need someone, it's that B says who can appoint someone to replace Tom. A is about how we go about appointing a permanent replacement.
Mr. Gold?
Regent Perkins, if I could, all that this is doing, number one, is putting the procedures and guidelines manual section in line with the code section change that you approved a meeting or so ago, which was to put it in line with the president's search committee process. And all it's saying now is The board initially will decide whether to conduct a national search. And if you look at what's stricken, it used to be the search committee that made that decision. So that's the only thing that's changed here.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just seemed like B was, thanks for the clarification, yep. Regent Hayes. The B just says whenever there's a vacancy versus when the search committee is number one, is A.
So right, and then what will happen, and which is what would happen, similar to the president's, is when we know there's going to be a vacancy, the code requires the chair and to go out with the chancellor and the vice chair, and they get the pulse of the NG community as to whether or not to do a search or appoint an interim, and that's what the recommendation in B is about.
Anything to add?
Yes, thank you. It took me a second to reread those. They, you know, some of the confusion might be in logical order. They could be flipped around in terms of one, I think, as Mr. Gold and also Regent Hayes mentioned, is concerning a recommendation from the chair to the overall committee about whether an acting or interim chancellor. And then the other one, provision A, concerns the search committee, as Mr. Gold was saying.
Seeing no other comments, do I have a motion for approval of 3B?
I will do that.
Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent McAdoo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Item number 4, NISHI Task Force on Performance Pay, Administration and Support, Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chairman Geddes. The change here is that we initially put together the Task Force on Performance Pay, Administrative and Support. We envisioned having legislators as part of that committee. When we reached out to them, they had received an opinion from the Legislative Council Bureau that they could not serve on committees that may end up making recommendations to themselves. So we have talked to those legislators. They're willing to come and engage in a Q&A with the board. And so our plan would be to still engage them after the committee meets one or two times, is to meet with those individually and then invite them to the committee for their input and engagement. So we get to the same place. They just won't be part of the official committee.
Any questions or comments for the chancellor?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Okay, I just didn't know if there was an action we're supposed to take since it had was listed. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there should be an action, Regent Hayes, and I'll tell you why.
Because if we approved the change
you approved
of the legislature.
A composition that included legislatures.
I move to accept the chancellor's recommended change to the composition of the committee.
Motion from Regent Hayes, second from Regent Dubrava. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. And Chair Carvalho, your first meeting is next week. Is that correct? Item number 5, Handbook Revision, Compliance Department Charter, Chief Counsel Reynolds. Sprint.
Thank you, Joe Reynolds, for the record, and also with me is our Chief Internal Auditor, Joe Sunbury. We're requesting that the board make fundamentally two handbook provisions. We currently have a vacancy in the Director of Compliance provision, so we believe this was a good time to bring these changes to the board. One is somewhat symbolic in terms of changing the name of the position from Director of Compliance to Compliance Coordinator. We believe that this is in line with some of the intent of the position to coordinate resources, education, training amongst all the system institutions. The other change fundamentally in this proposal is the reporting structure, so that the compliance coordinator will report to the chief internal auditor, Mr. Sunbury, on day-to-day and administrative matters. And that will, I think, eliminate some confusion. Previously, there was a dual reporting requirement of the position to both myself as the NC Chief Legal Counsel and also the Chief Internal Auditor. We believe this simplifies that and will be more efficient. And both myself and Mr. Sunbury are available to answer questions.
Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a problem with the changing from director to coordinator, et cetera. My bigger concern that I think we should look at as a board is, you know, we are a governing and policy-making board, not a management board, and codifying which positions are in the compliance department seems very managerial, and we typically leave those decisions up to the chancellor to work with his staff on what level of people to hire. And I'm wondering, I know, and I spoke with Mr. Sunbury about this, and they're eager to get someone going, so I'm not going to vote against this, but what I would ask if the rest of the board agrees with my thoughts, if they don't, no worries, but maybe we bring this back and take this out of the handbook, because it just seems very micromanaging of us. It's not very nimble for allowing them for staff changes, and it just doesn't seem like our role to be deciding should it be a coordinator or a director at a position.
While I agree with part of that, Regent Hayes, I think the reason we have this here is because audit is its separate function that really doesn't go through the line of the chancellor, so it really does need to come to us through the audit. Would you want to address? So that's why I think it's appropriate to do it this way, but I understand your point.
But do they report up to the chief of staff and then to the board chair? Who does audit report to?
A dual report to the audit chair and the board chair.
So, again, I just don't think it allows the flexibility. Things will change. 5 years from now, they may need a director again, or they might need someone in the middle. Or I just don't know that we have to go through the process of changing the handbook every time the needs of staffing change. But, again, I could be wrong. It's not a hill to die for.
Thank you. Mr. Sunbury?
Thank you. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. Regent Hayes, I think one of the things you're speaking to is maybe some efficiencies, and one of the things we'll absolutely look forward to in the future is, you know, is there a way to maybe combine the charters? I think initially when this position was set up, we had our audit charter in Title IV, Chapter 9, and then we had sort of a parallel compliance charter. I think this change would potentially lead to perhaps the combination down the road, which would make things a lot more efficient. So,
Regent Carter.
Wanted to comment as well. So I think the point is well taken, and I think in our committee, in the audit committee, we should go back and take a peek at that and maybe look combining those. I think the way that the charter is written right now to not have a position leaves it too vague. So there has to be some sort of position that's in charge of that. And because of the kind of keeping it away from this direct system reporting through the board of regents and through our, you know, auditor, I think that's the primary purpose behind having it codified like that. But I think we should definitely take that back to the audit committee and figure out if we can combine those or what actually that needs to look like.
Thank you.
Second.
Motion from Regent Carter, second from Regent Hayes. Comment, Regent McAdoo.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I do want to publicly thank the previous director of compliance. I think she left that piece of our work in really good shape for what's to come, whether it's a coordinator or another director or whatever the title is. So I just want to publicly thank her for that.
Regent Carter.
And a result of this compliance thing, there's been a lot of compliance bulking up and designation and a lot of work that's happened at our institution. So bringing that to the attention and us taking the time to make that charter and establish that position and hire that position has led to a lot of little changes all throughout the institutions and a renewed focus on compliance at all of those. So this has been a good thing.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 6, handbook revision, associated practice plans. Chief Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you. This is a matter where we're asking the board to create a new provision in Title IV, Chapter 10, involving our practice plans. And with me is if I get your title correctly, Senior Associate Dean of the UNR School of Medicine, Mr. Matt Malone, who's also a highly experienced lawyer who's helped drafted these. The reason that we wanted to bring these before the board at this meeting is UNLV School of Medicine is currently working on its bylaws, its operating agreement that we hope to bring to the board at the board's winter meeting. This has established some baseline requirements that can be consistent through the practice plans both at UNLV and are currently in place with the UNR practice plan. And Mr. Malone can walk through some of the specifics if the board would like to hear it.
Thank you. Do we have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Carter.
So moved.
Second. Second from Regent Trachok. Any questions, or would you like to hear the presentation? Are we comfortable with the material? Highlights.
Well, essentially what we had for a long time was we just had the one practice plan at UNR, and we had a contract that was formed between the Board of Regents and that UNR practice plan in 2008. And as Mr. Reynolds said, now that we have two practice plans, we want to make sure that we have some clarification about the rules and the relationships between the Board of Regents and those practice plans. The primary sources for putting these together were the CMS manual for payers, which defines what the requirements are for faculty practice plans associated with universities, the 2004 restructuring proposal of the UNR practice plan, which was approved by the Board of Regents, and also that 2008 agreement with the UNR practice plan, which was approved by the Board of Regents. To a lesser extent, I relied on my experience with the American Health Lawyers Association, academic medical centers, and teaching institutions, a group which we have a lot of conversations about practice plan structures and rules, as well as the IRS rules for 501c3s, and then the Martinez case, which was a case that came out from the Nevada Supreme Court about a decade ago, which talks about the sovereign immunity for NC faculty that are working with practice plans. And those were the baselines that we used to create these rules, which really reflect the relationships that exist but gives clarity both to people within the system and the public at large regarding the relationship. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 7. Thank you. Good work, you guys. Thank you. Item number 7, Memorandum of Understanding, Operation Hope. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chairman Geddes. This board, for a long period of time, has expressed its concern and interest in ensuring that our students are financially literate, that they're navigating through obtaining loans, and have really encouraged me, as well as the presidents, to address strategies to ensure that's done. For the last couple of years, we've been engaging in a lot of conversations with a variety of financial institutions that have offered that. We had some trepidation, a little concerned about aligning ourselves just with one financial organization. So we're real pleased today that we were connected with Operation Hope, and Anita Ward, who is the president and CEO, is here from Atlanta, and she, if
that makes it easier.
If that. Am I echoing? If that's okay, when I get done speaking, if we can have Ms. Ward come up here. But Operation Hope is a nonprofit organization that operates nationally that is in the financial space, financial literacy space. They have also done considerable work with universities and colleges. What they do is they serve as the middle ground to address and find funding for individuals to place financial coaches and counselors at our institutions. What's amazing is it's at no cost. We provide the space, but they provide these agnostic, nonprofit employees in our institutions to do both workshops and one-on-one counseling around financial literacy, not only with our students, but actually our staff. It's pretty amazing. And what's before you today is just a memorandum of understanding with ENCHI and Operation Hope about a partnership. They, in turn, would have to work with each of our specific institutions about where they place the financial counselors. I didn't feel comfortable getting into that type of detail. That's up to the presidents as far as how they want to place them, where they want to place them, how they want to engage in recruiting those individuals. The last thing I'll say before we invite Ms. Ward up here is that they have actually found funding already for two of our institutions, both CSN and Nevada State College. They've been in conversations with them. They are working with their own specific MOUs, but they've pledged to find funding for all our institutions. Again, it's up to the individual presidents about how they want to engage in those agreements. And if it's okay, Chairman Geddes, could we invite Ms. Ward up just to say a few words? Thank you.
Operation Hope is a 27-year-old nonprofit organization, and while we, as the chancellor said, focus on financial literacy, it's really much more than that. We think about it as financial dignity, and over the 27 years, we've helped about 4 million people find a new path to what we think of as financial confidence and really financial empowerment. And I think if you step back and look at where we are right now, where 63% of Americans can't afford a $500 emergency, according to CFPB, then there may be no more relevant topic than what we have in front of us today in helping our students with their debt and our faculty with situations where it's an embarrassing situation to come forward and say, I have more month at the end of my money. What can I do? So we think of it much more as dignity than that. So we provide tools. And before joining Operation Hope, I was at the Lou Ruvo Center. So I think about it as interventions. So in the same way that you're concerned with brain health, we're concerned with financial well-being and financial health. So where this is Eric Parks, our regional vice president, by the way, senior vice president for the region and responsible for this. But Eric's situation, financial situation, may be quite different from my own. So students and faculty would have an opportunity first to attend workshops at the universities. And then what they would do is sign up voluntarily for coaching sessions. And each coaching session may have separate interventions around credit scores or savings or reducing or eliminating debt altogether. And because we are a nonprofit, then what we're able to do is make unbiased situations about the kinds of tools that we would put in place to help a specific individual. Otherwise, they get stuck in these cycles of poverty that just are overwhelming. And I came to Las Vegas in 1972, and my story is really very much one of those stories. My parents brought us here from Pennsylvania with four kids in a U-Haul with $200. I didn't have financial literacy growing up. And that U-Haul was our home for a while we lived here. And I'm a lucky one. I got to a point where through education, through some great mentors, I learned the language of money. But there are a lot of people today who don't know that. So I'm personally committed both to Las Vegas. I'm committed to the students and the NSHE. And I'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. So I'll answer any questions about the programs. Eric will be the on-site and leader of it, and we are committed to the rest of the universities, including UNLV. So can I answer any questions?
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval of the Memorandum of Understanding?
I have one question, but I don't know if it's directed at Ms. Ward or not.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can this be a requirement for students that receive student loans? Because that's one of the things that gets students in debt very quickly in the large amounts.
If I could address that, thank you, Regent Perkins, for that excellent question, too. I mean, one of the priority areas, obviously, is a concern I know that this board has expressed, and we've had this conversation with all the presidents, are those students that are receiving the loans. And so we would have a push towards requiring that. Encouraging that. Going back to why we've kind of crafted it where the presidents would be in charge of how it's designated their institutions, that could have a factor of how they interface with their own financial counselors, the number that they have. So I was a little concerned at this point of mandating it, although I can tell you from conversations with all the presidents that that's top of mind of those students that are receiving the loans.
Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make that motion.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent Trachok. Comment from Regent McAdoo?
Yes. So as much as I am supportive of Operation Hope, and Chancellor Riley explained all that to me in a meeting a while back, and I did my own research on it, so thank you for your work. I just want to say that when we received an email on November 8th from the NSHE News that addressed this as though it was already passed, but somewhere down in the middle of the article, it talked about the regents would be voting on it today. I just feel compelled to give the message that I do not think it's okay for an MOU to be made public as though I feel backed into a corner to not to vote for this. I'm supportive of it. But when the MOU goes out to the public before I as a regent get to see it and vote on it, I'm just recommending we don't do that. And I just felt I needed to say it. Thank you.
President Patterson? No.
Sorry, this is one of the earlier comments. But we require financial aid counseling around loans. And so how that piece in our financial aid department working with Operation Hope, that's one of the pieces we'll work out. But we do require there to be that counseling connection with any loan already without Operation Hope.
Vice Chancellor McKinnon?
I would just point out that any student receiving federal loans under federal law must do exit interviewing already. That's a requirement of federal law for federal loans.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Now we'll go to item number 8, Office of the Chancellor. As you all know, under Title II, Chapter 1, Section 1.5, we have a procedure for filling the vacancy of a chancellor. As Chancellor Riley indicated, he will finish his term in August of 2020. So we went out, the chancellor, myself, Vice Chair Dubrava, and then we were joined in a couple of the forums by Regent Perkins and Regent Lieberman. And we visited the campuses and solicited feedback. And I'll tell you, they were some of the fastest meetings we had because everybody basically had the consensus point that we have time to perform a search, so we should perform a search. So what I'm asking the board to consider today is to authorize us to move forward with a search for the next chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education and authority to solicit a search firm to run the process. And in that process, one thing that we're going to include with the search consultant is Chief of Staff Gould and Vice Chancellor Abba have been interviewing and will continue to interview current and former members of the cabinet of staff, former chancellors, former presidents, and gathering input on the role of the chancellor. And then the also the search consultant will interview every one of us individually and get input while they craft and put together a job description that will then go to the search committee for its consideration and approval. So that's kind of how we envisage the process going. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there any concern when you went out on campuses about the timing of the search in relation to AJR5? I mean, my one thought thing I would think we might want to consider is finding an interim for a year from August till the next year, and then starting the search after we know the results of AJR5, because that hanging out there could hinder our ability to attract quality candidates who say, hey, here's a job I'm going to accept in September, and, oh, it could be changed significantly shortly thereafter.
Regent Hayes, it did come up in a few of the forums, not many of them, but it did come up, and really the discussion focused around how long it would take for AJR5 to be implemented, and really the role of the chancellor is nowhere in AJR5. It is just the Board of Regents on if we're elected or not, and it would be up to the 2021 legislature to determine how they're going to deal with the Board of Regents if it passes and we're not in the Constitution. And then subsequently, they would have to look at the role of chancellor. But all the law still says that the Board of Regents regardless of AGR 5, oversees the chancellor. So none of that changes until the earliest 21 in the bills that were out there, where they were the compendium bill, SB 354, that looked at changing the structure. Their implementation dates were 2023. So it seems like we shouldn't just keep kicking it depending on where things go. So the consensus was launch the search and see where it goes. So, Regent McAdoo.
And yes, I have this written out. I would like to say publicly that I strongly share the few concerns that were noted in 8A that you just asked about, Trevor. From noted at the Chancellor forums about performing the search with the unknown outcome of AJR 5 and its potential impact on the Board of Regents and the position of NC Chancellor. Although I am in favor of a national search for the NC Chancellor, I believe the timing should be delayed. Therefore, if this comes across as a motion, I will be voting no on the recommendation for the following reasons. I think the timing is wrong to commence the search prior to the general election in November 2020, when the decision on AJR 5 will be made known. I think it is in the best economic and leadership interest of Nevadans and higher education in Nevada to hire an acting chancellor to take up that role until the close of the current chancellor's contract on August 7, 2020. I think I have that date right. With the unknown outcome of AJR 5, my recommendation would be to hire someone as the acting chancellor from within the system who can lead us not only through the November 2020 election, but the 2021 legislative session. Depending on the ballot question outcome, a recommendation regarding holding a national search for our next chancellor can be brought to the Board of Regents as a whole at the December 2020 board meeting or at a special board meeting held in early 2021. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Regent Trachop?
Yes, I share the concerns that have been raised by both of my colleagues. I think the system would be better served if we were to choose somebody from within the system to guide us through the 2021 legislative period. I think that any individual who would be qualified for this job would have great pause in considering applying for it. Number one, it's a public process, and number two, there's tremendous uncertainty as to what the job would entail if the amendment to the Constitution is approved. And so I would oppose a search at this time, and I'm in favor of looking for somebody within the system to act in the or to step into the acting role through the 2021 legislative period.
Thank you, and I would respectfully disagree with my colleagues. As I mentioned with that timeline there, generally when we go out and we hire people, it is on a three-year contract, and based on the implementation timeline for AGR 5, if it does pass, we really are looking at least 3 years before they would be looking at the role of chancellor, and I think it would be important to have someone in there who could take the role and, you know, the voice from all the groups that we got, students, faculty, community members, everybody thought a search was appropriate and that we should perform a search. And that's why we have these procedures. And I would ask us to go forward with the search. I'm going to go to Regent Page and then Regent Hayes and then Regent Moran. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I want to agree with my colleagues. I think we should postpone the search and have it acting for those exact reasons. Last time we did a chance to search, and AJR 5 did not pass, but they were talking about it. It was a concern. So I would be in favor of postponing it. Thanks.
Thank you. Regent Hayes. Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of quick observations. I mean, we're playing chess here. We're not playing checkers. And we have business to do, And I think that I would agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that we need to move forward with a search for the next chancellor. I don't believe that hesitating at this point in time or putting anything into a pause position would do anything other than create more complications long-term for the board and for the institution. You've heard from the institutions. That's a big part of our process and what we're required to do as regents, at least the chair and the vice chair, going out and soliciting responses and information and having that dialogue on campus. And we hear what our campus folks are telling us. So that being said, I would support you, Mr. Chairman. I would say let's move for the best candidate for the position. Whether that's somebody who happens to rise to the top that's within, that's fantastic too, and I admire that. But I also want to make sure that anybody that we're selecting is somebody that is the best person for the job, whether it's internal or external. And that's how I'm going to be for my remainder of my tenure in this position. But I think, again, that we move quickly, swiftly. Again, we have to work with the real-time facts that we have in front of us right now. And there are so many moving parts to AJR5 that are, quite frankly, not even discernible at this specific point in time from a legal standpoint. And that's just wearing my lawyer hat for a minute. So coulda, shoulda, may never be. Again, we need to make real-time decisions, and I think it would only be responsible for us to move forward business as usual as it stands right now.
Thank you.
The mic.
Thank you. My name is Janice McKay. I'm the chair of the UNLV Faculty Senate, and I just want to express my agreement and speaking for faculty with what Regent Moran just said and what the chair has said. The overwhelming opinion of faculty, not just at UNLV, but from what I've heard across all the institutions, is please to go ahead and not wait. And I think that the faculty would be very dismayed if something else were to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Lieberman, then Hayes.
I agree with my colleagues because of the timetable of AJR5, but I also agree with the chair. This is not going to be a one-year period. This is going to be a three-year period before this all plays out, and I think to put somebody in an acting role or an interim role or a non-permanent role for more than 1 year is just not moving the system forward. So I would vote for putting somebody in sooner rather than later. And if we end up with a new chancellor with a new job description in 3 years, that's what we'll get.
Thank you. Regent Hayes.
Thanks. So what would the time frame be of wanting to have someone selected? Probably May or so, so they'd have time to wrap things up where they are and then spend a little time here with Chancellor Riley getting up to speed and then starting officially in September? Is that kind of...
May could be preferable. My hope would be by July 1 so that they would have at least July and part of August to work with the Chancellor on those issues, but if we can get them sooner, yes.
With my strong concerns about how AJR5 is going to affect the candidate pool, I'm going to vote in favor, but I'm also going to not be afraid to fail a search if we don't find the right person, and request that we try to move that time frame up to about May or so that we know and then can start looking over the summer for an internal candidate. I think if we do find that stellar star candidate, whether it's someone in the state or outside that's here for a longer term, 3 years or whatnot, I think that may speak well to the legislature and the public at whole if AJR5 passes about what changes they may or may not want to make. AJR5 does do more than simply affect whether regents can be elected. It does take some of our authority away. There was a bill last session about eliminating the chancellor under the current structure. If we do have that star person in place, maybe they're more likely to leave some more things intact. But I will not be afraid to try to persuade my colleagues to fail a search if we don't see that star candidate come through. And I would highly, highly request that we try to have an end date of May so that we have the summer to find an interim if we need to.
Thank you. And it will be up to the chair of the search committee to work with Dean on that timeline and get that in there and definitely take that in consideration. And I share your concern that I'm not afraid to fail a search if we don't find the right candidate. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you very much. This is a really good discussion, and I was concerned, too, about AJR5 and all the unknowns. However, just having that on the ballot is an unknown, and we won't even know for over a year. So with that in mind, this conference opened with a terrific speaker, and he wrote a book called Leadership in Higher Education. And the chancellor is our leader, and I really feel that we should do a national search, too. There is so much talent out there. You see that in these conferences. When you go to these different seminars and different presidents speak, how they came in, changed the culture, et cetera, et cetera. So I see both sides, but we have got so many good things going for us with our 5 strategic goals. I just think that we need to continue and find the best leadership we can to come to our system. I'll be voting in favor.
Thank you. Regent Carter.
So I actually came today to vote no, but in listening to all my colleagues, I have a couple questions for Joe Reynolds. First, is there any limitation to us saying your contract is for 3 years, and if AGR 5 passed and your position was eliminated, we would pay out that 3 years to encourage candidates to not be scared by that? So rather than just not acknowledging that AGR 5 is there, it's there, and we're guaranteeing that you're going to be paid either way.
There's no specific Joe Reynolds, for the record, to answer your question, Regent Carter's, or at least to try to, is, you know, the contract, the board can negotiate the contract with the new chancellor, whoever that is, and put different provisions in a contract, you know, that are mutually agreeable by both parties. Off the top of my head, I necessarily wouldn't advise that the board do that. Just contingent, you know, putting a contract contingent upon the passage of a constitutional amendment. You know, the board, in our current chancellor's contract, as with our presidential contracts, there's provisions in there about resignations or terminations with or without cause in different obligations that can come with that. But there is some flexibility. I hope this answers your question in terms of what could be in a contract.
So in our advertisement, how will we address AGR5? Because that seems to be the kind of the limitation, I guess, to us doing this search, is this AGR5 thing and not scaring off candidates. So how would we, maybe there, somebody else can comment on how we would sell that to people?
It wouldn't necessarily be in the advertisement, but we would definitely have a sit down with the search consultant and go through the process and talk about what the realities are, so that search consultant, when they're identifying candidates to come forward, that each candidate is well aware of what the issues in Nevada are and what the potential of AGR5 may or may not be. So we will definitely assign that role to the search consultant, and then when the committee is narrowing down the finalists, we'll reinforce that with them. Can I get
Chairman.
A motion for a Can I get a motion to...
So moved.
I have a motion from Regent Lieberman, second from Regent Perkins, and then I'll go to Regent Moran and then Regent Trachuk. Regent Moran.
Sure. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of thoughts, too, as we're having... this is, I think, a really, really good dialogue, and I think that it needs to continue. But I think at some point in time, you know, AJR5 is starting to have a little bit more meat on that bone. But when you take a look at it, it really is the ultimate consequence of many, many decisions that were made going back many, many years ago with regards to the Board of Regents and its constitution at that specific point in time in terms of the people who were sitting on the Board of Regents at that point in time. But again, it is a natural consequence. Having said that, I think what we need to refocus on is possibly putting together a work group that doesn't violate open meeting laws, that takes a look at the open meeting law, or I'm sorry, that takes a look at AJR5 and you know, the consequences of AJR 5 as it starts to build a little bit, as we start getting closer to that public election, as we start to get forward to if it passes and if it happens to, you know, I don't know if that's something that you already have in place, Dean Gould, staff, but
no,
I think
Regent Moran, could I respectfully ask, that would be a topic for new business. It's really beyond the issue of whether or not to do a search. I'm not saying it's not an appropriate comment, but it really should be a new business topic. Then the chair can decide whether to agendize that issue.
No, I totally, but totally agree.
In the
agree.
Context of whether we should be doing a search, AJR 5 is relevant only to the extent of whether or not you want to postpone the search.
No,
not,
no. And all,
not
I'm suggesting, and all I'm suggesting is that as we start to discuss issues that are agendized, as we move forward and AJR 5 starts to materialize and hatch itself, there are going to be little bits and pieces of AJR 5 and what a right. particular board member thinks that's going to come into the dialogue
Understand.
And become relevant.
And it's a good
one
point.
One of which has to do with this item right here. So what I'm suggesting, and I can suggest it new business if you'd like.
I
well.
Think it's most appropriate to do so. Oh,
very well.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Regent Moran. Regent Trachok.
Any candidate who was unaware of AJR 5 should automatically be disqualified for consideration.
They would probably say Nevada. Brian, did you have a comment?
I did. So Brian Frost, for the record, the chair of the Faculty Senate for University of Nevada, Reno, and also the chair of the Council of Chairs. I wanted to reiterate Janice's comments that the faculty were strongly supportive of a search. I think it would be a big mistake. We have plenty of time to do a search. To not do a search would be a mistake. The faculty are really clear on this. We recently did a climate study at the University of Nevada, Reno, and one of the outcomes of that was faculty were really disheartened by the number, by nepotism, cronyism, hiring within and not doing searches. And I think this would, having a year to make a search and then not doing a search and just appointing somebody would be a very bad look, in my opinion. So thank you.
Thank you. Regent McAdoo. And then we'll go to a roll call vote.
I just want to make it clear that I wasn't recommending that we just appoint a chancellor from within for forever. It was simply as an acting chancellor who then would not even be eligible to apply to be chancellor unless we waived that. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gould?
Okay. So we start with Regent Del Carlo. You're first. The motion is whether to approve a search and appoint a search consultant.
The motion is to approve.
Yeah, that's
I vote yes. I want.
Okay. Vice Chair Geddes.
Yes.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Lieberman.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
No.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Trachok.
No.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Yes.
And Vice Chair DuBrava.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We will now move to item number 9, Investment Committee. Chair Trachok.
Chair Gaines.
We get to that.
Sorry, just one. Mr. Trachok, just one second. Sorry.
Chair Gaines, I didn't know if we were going to talk at all about B regarding the duties of the chancellor. Is that for?
That's for the search committee. Oh, sorry. The search committee, as I mentioned earlier, the search consultant will interview all of the regents and take the results that Dean Gould and Vice Chancellor Abber are getting as far as duties of the chancellor, roles and responsibilities. And then the search committee will approve that at their meeting. Sorry, Regent Trachok.
With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, the agenda item number 8 says that the discussion may include an overview of the chancellor's role, the search process, and the timeline for the search. Do I understand that we're not going to discuss the chancellor's role?
Sorry, Ms. Trachok, we can discuss that here. If you would like to have input on that here, it will also, as I said, they will interview everybody, and the search committee will approve it, but you are welcome to put input at this agenda item now if you wish. As are you, Mr. DeBrava. My apologies.
I just thought going back historically, I thought maybe we do want to broach the subject now of what the role of the chancellor is, and certainly in regards to the duties where the chancellor is charged with discipline of university or college presidents, and how that discipline can advance, and then if there's any type of a termination of a president. So I thought that was sort of a hot button issue that we do have to decide as a board if we want to tweak that or make some significant changes. In 2004, I think those duties and authority were changed from previous administrations. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there to see if there's any input or if maybe what you were suggesting, Chair Geddes, that when the search committee is selected and comes forward, they're going to interview each regent and get some feedback. So tell me a little bit how you might think that plays out.
Yes, and that was it, is that the search consultant would get the input and feedback from cabinet members, presidents, former cabinet members, former presidents, former chancellors, and provide that in. The change in 2004 actually wasn't a change. I mean, the role, the change was that the chancellor performs the annual evaluations. Since the board was no longer allowed to do evaluations in closed sessions for the president, and then we do the three-year evaluation. So a president still cannot be terminated by the chancellor. The chancellor can only recommend to the board to consider termination, and it is up to the board to have a discussion and a hearing and make that decision. The chancellor does not have the authority per our code.
Mr. Chairman.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes, I think that even though this may not be the right time to do this, even though it has been agendized, I think before we proceed with the search, we bloody well better be clear on what our expectations are of the chancellor. If you take a look at the report that was provided by the faculty and members of the chancellor's cabinet in 1983, and the same type of report was also prepared in 1992, we see the mood of the institutions and the system alternates between having a chancellor who simply is an administrative officer, who is one equal with the presidents of the institutions, to recommendations for a CEO type chancellor like we have today. I personally think that the expectation that you will find somebody who has the throw weight, if you will, to perform the administrative function of administering the system and at the same time be the president's boss. There are not a lot of people out there that have both of those qualities, and we are fooling ourselves if we think that we're going to find that very special a person. I also have concerns with items number 12 and 14 in the section 3E, the duties of the chancellor, and that has to do with the evaluation and disciplining our presidents. And I think before we start the search, we need to have consensus, or at least we need to have a vote of the majority of the board to define what this chancellor or this person's role should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Lieberman.
Shouldn't that discussion take place after the search consultant meets with all of us and other stakeholders to find out what input can be given to that discussion?
Yeah, I think based on what we're hearing here today, I think the best route would be to have that search consultant meet with the groups, talk to everybody, come up with a change to this section of the code to bring it back out the board for our consideration, and either either a special meeting or the December meeting, but let the search committee and the consultant write it the way it needs to be, and then we can bring it back for ratification by this board at that point. So I think that would work. Regent Lieberman.
Will that affect the timetable if we wait for that process?
We can make it work.
Okay.
Regent Carter.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if it's in the purview of the search consultant to necessarily write the job description of the chancellor for our system and to provide recommended code changes, but I may be the outlier that believes that.
Okay. Regent Lieberman?
My point was not to say that the search consultant can do it, but they could take input from all of us and present it back to us for board discussion.
Regent Carter, and then we vote.
Yeah, then we'll go. So oh, we I guess voted. I would ask Joe Reynolds if that's an appropriate thing for a search consultant to do, is to revise code inside our system based on feedback from us.
Joe Reynolds, for the record. At the end of the day, and I think as the board is aware of this, it's the board that sets the policy. It's the board that makes changes to the handbook or the code and defines, the role of the chancellor. So obviously the buck stops with the board. Speaking though out loud, part of a job of a consultant is to consult and to advise and to provide information or feedback and for the board then to take that input into consideration.
Regent McAdoo.
So, Chair Geddes, can you give at least an idea to us then how you see that working? Are we going to overwork the job description prior to anything else happening, including hiring a search firm? Are we hiring a search firm and then we're going to try to make this happen? I mean, I think having a job description in place is critical to hiring a new chancellor. Who's going to take a job when they don't know what their job is?
Well, I think the timeline would be to hire the search consultant, have them talk to everybody, work on the changes. Timing-wise, either send that through the search committee itself, which might be a good way to go, to have them take a look at it. And then bring it back to us for ratification, or we could do it the opposite and bring it to us for our feedback and then give it to the search committee and the advisory to that search committee and have them work on it some more. But it would ultimately have to come back to the board for the actual code change to the job description. But I think having the consultant hear from everybody and be able to recommend changes to us for our consideration would be the path.
So I'm sorry, will you just please define the word everybody to me? Who are you talking about?
Oh, everybody would be the people that Mr. Gould and Ms. Abba are interviewing, all 13 of the Board of Regents, and then there would be input from the Advisory Committee and Regent Search Committee as defined by our code section,
okay.
Which, if you haven't looked at it, it includes every president, every faculty senate chair, every student body president, and then additional members added to it.
I just find the word everybody to be a really broad word.
Yes,
so
it is a very
you.
Broad word. My apologies. Regent Trachok, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do have a comment. The defining the job description is not something that should be delegated to anybody, any consultant. I think that's our job. And I think I would hope that we would have this on the agenda for December, because I think it's important for this board to define the role it expects the next chancellor for going through a search as we are, what that role will entail. Most of problems in life are a result of frustrated expectations. And if our expectations aren't clearly articulated, as well as the candidates, we will be very frustrated.
I agree. And the search consultant would be preparing recommendations for this board's consideration. They would not be writing it. They would prepare recommendations for this board's consideration. And with timing, we'll either have it at the December meeting or we'll do a special meeting if need be.
Thank you.
Regent Del Carlo?
Hold on. Can I get him? Can't get up.
You're okay. We can hear you, Regent.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry. I wasn't sure. This technology. This is an excellent discussion, and I think the search consultant is our key person. I know there, I believe there will be an RFP going out, and you have many to choose from. I see the search consultants, we've used several over again with great success, and they see the best practices out there all over the country, these different search consultants. So they, I do believe it's our job to say what it is we want our chancellor to do, but they certainly can guide us in that process. And I do feel we pay them well to help us do that as a consultant. So I really think we need to move forward with this search, because the sooner we can find our person, the sooner we can get some overlap before our current chancellor leaves. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gould.
I just want to point out two things. Anything that's done, whether it's by the search consultant or whatever, will obviously have to pass muster under the open meeting law. So you can be assured that Mr. Reynolds and I will be watching that very carefully, and we're not trying to in any way avoid an open discussion in an open meeting. That's number one. Number two, any changes that will occur because they're in the code will require two readings, so you need to keep that in mind in terms of timing. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're moving to item number 9, Investment Committee, Chair Trachuk.
Yes, the Investment Committee met on September 27th, and everybody has a copy of the minutes of that meeting. The committee heard reports on the endowment and operating reserve pool performances. The committee directed ANCHI staff to work with both Cambridge and Russell to develop a draft letter of instruction to our OCIOs and to the investment managers to take into account climate-related risks and opportunities when investing with ANCHI assets. The our CFO, Vice Chancellor Klinger, has a letter that was drafted in conjunction with our two OCIOs, and that will be presented as agenda item number 10 for this board's approval. The we also directed the two OCIOs to work together with the Chancellor's staff and the responsible officers at the institutions to do a survey of all the campuses and to get feedback from the constituent groups on the campuses related to climate change, divestment from fossil fuels, and related topics. The committee recommended minor changes to the committee's charge to provide clarity on the standard committee's duties. The committee also recommended to reallocate up to $75 million from the short-term and intermediate-term pools into the long-term pool based on operating pool cash flow analysis prepared by all of the institutions. And what this would result in is the short-term operating pool would be reduced from $264 million to $188 million. Our returns on the long-term is in the range of 4 to 6%. Our returns is just like our returns on a checking account is what we have with the short-term pool, which is less than 1%. So we would ask that the board approve that reallocation. And we also recommended to this board approval to extend the banking services contracts by 1 year to allow the RFP process to run its course. I would make a motion. I move to approve the minutes of the investment committee meeting.
Second.
Second from Regent Carvalho. We will note for the record that Regent Page will be abstaining from this vote, and we want to let the board know that we do have to have 9 votes because we do have a bylaw change. So With the motion and second, are there any questions? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously with an abstention by Regent Page. Item number 10, Nishi letter to outsource chief investment officers on climate-related risks and opportunities. Chair Trachok and Chief Financial Officer Klinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Regent Trachok indicated in his report from the Investment Committee, the Investment Committee directed myself to work with our two OCIOs to draft a letter directing them to work with the underlying fund managers of Inchi Investments to get a better understanding of what climate-related policies they have as they look at their investments and how they incorporate climate-related strategies into their investment analysis process. I originally submitted a draft letter to the board, which was in your packet, but submitted a revised letter yesterday as supplemental material. And our recommendation, or my recommendation, is that the letter that was submitted as supplemental material be the letter. I would recommend that letter be approved by the board.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Trachok, second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any noes? Motion carries unanimously with an abstention from Regent Page. Item number 11, new business. I did take note of Regent Moran's comment on looking at AGR 5 and activities.
Regent Moran? No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk on this item. AGR 5, again, it's something that is it's coming. And so whether it gets voted in or doesn't get voted in, I think that as a board, I think that we have an obligation and responsibility to get ahead of it at this point in time. And whether that's today or tomorrow or in the next month or so, I think it would make sense because I think there's so many people that have their finger on this pulse, whether it's the philanthropic communities and throughout the state that have some interest in this, whether it has to do with the faculty, whether it has to do with the professors, the students, everybody, at least my constituents, when I go out into my ward, they bring up, people that are paying attention to this or are reading the newspaper or availing themselves of this information, they ask the question, well, how is this going to affect the system in general moving forward long term? And I just think that it would be since unless there's something that I wouldn't know about that's already been concocted and is moving forward, I think now is the time to really put together some sort of like an exploratory committee or some sort of a search committee that can go out and kind of maybe fabricate bridges with some of the folks that do have an interest in AGR 5. I think that we have a vested interest because as it comes closer to us, we're going to have to make decisions because it's slowly permeating into a lot of the decisions that we'll be making, whether it's the search, whether it's the chancellor's roles, what does the institutional support look like? How does this affect the students?
So if I can summarize.
So what I...
Yeah, because this is new business.
A position, we'll bring it back for discussion for a position on AGR 5 and ramifications between now and...
Well, we're getting paid to be here until 5 o'clock.
But it wasn't agendized, so we cannot talk about it.
Not new business.
So you've made the point. We have it on the list. The time to talk about it now is when it's agendized.
So let's shift gears for a minute. Would it be apropos to ask for legal counsel to provide us some sort of an opinion as to what that looks like in terms of fabricating that search committee or that exploratory committee moving forward?
It would be apropos right now for you to have made the comment. The chair heard you. If the chair directs the general counsel, nothing else can happen on it until and unless it's agendized.
Terrific. Because information is power. We should be ahead of the curve. No pun intended. So, yes, I appreciate you letting me comment and take more time, Mr. Chairman.
Any other new business? Seeing none and hearing none, we go to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, we stand adjourned.